The attitude of that kindly terrestrial three-brained being, Haji Azvat Struve, was all the more benevolent toward me because I was the friend of a good friend of his. It must be remarked here, by the way, that the three-brained beings on this part of the surface of your planet are the only ones among whom the relationship of true friendship still exists. Among them, as among three-brained beings everywhere else in the universe, and on that entire planet in its earliest epochs, not only is a friend himself a friend, but his near relatives and friends are also regarded as friends and are treated just the same as the friend himself. I wished to make my relationship with Haji Azvat Struve still better because I very much wanted to know how he had become interested in that science and how he had attained scientific accomplishments unprecedented on the Earth, and therefore, throughout our conversation, I made liberal use of the forms of verbal amiability that were customary in that locality. In the course of our conversation, which dealt exclusively with the science called at that time Shat Chai Nirnis, while speaking of the nature and significance of vibrations in general, we came to mention the octave of sound. Haji Azvat Struve said that not only did the octave of sound have seven aspects of relatively independent whole manifestations, but that the vibrations of any one of these relatively independent totalities, in the manner of their arising as well as in their manifestation, obeyed the same law. And still on the subject of the laws of the vibrations of sound, he went on to say, I myself became interested in the science of Shat Chai Nirnis through studying the laws of the vibrations of sound, and they were the cause of my devoting the rest of my life to this science. He thought a moment and then related the following. I should first tell you, my friends, that although I was a very rich man before I entered the Brotherhood of the Dervishes, I was very fond of working at a certain craft. I used to make various stringed instruments of the kind called saz, tar, kamanja, and others. Even after I entered the Brotherhood, I devoted all my free time to this craft, making musical instruments chiefly for our dervishes. And the way I became so seriously interested in the laws of vibrations was this. Once the sheikh of our monastery called me to him and said, Haji, in the monastery where I was still an ordinary dervish during certain mysteries, whenever our dervish musicians played the melodies of the sacred canticles, all of us dervishes, on hearing these melodies, experienced particular sensations corresponding to the text itself of the canticle. But here, during my long and careful observations, I have never yet noticed any particular effect on our brother dervishes from these same sacred canticles. What is wrong? Why is this so? To discover the cause of this has recently become my aim, and I have now called you to speak with you about it. Perhaps you, as an amateur specialist in making musical instruments, can help me clear up this question that interests me. Thereupon, we began to inquire into this question from every aspect, and after long deliberations, we finally concluded that the whole cause probably lay in the very nature of the vibrations of the sounds. We came to this conclusion because it came to light during our inquiry that in the monastery where our sheikh had been an ordinary dervish, they played, aside from the tambour, various stringed instruments, whereas here in our monastery, these same sacred melodies were played exclusively on wind instruments. So we decided to replace, without delay, all the wind instruments in our monastery with stringed instruments. But then another serious problem arose. For we saw that it would be impossible to gather enough specialists from among our dervishes to play the stringed instruments. Then our sheikh, after thinking for a while, said to me, "Haji, you who are a specialist in stringed instruments, try, and perhaps you can manage to make a stringed instrument on which any dervish, without being a specialist, can produce the sounds of the desired melody by a simple mechanical motion, such as turning, striking, pressing, or something of that sort." This proposal of our sheikh at once interested me very much, and I undertook the task with great pleasure. Having made this decision, I got up, received his blessing, and went home to my quarters. I sat down and thought very seriously for a long time, and the result of my reflections was that I decided to make cymbals with strings and to devise, with the help of a friend, the dervish Kerbalay Asis Nuran, a mechanism of small hammers which in striking would produce the required sounds. That same evening, I went to see this friend of mine, the dervish Kerbalay Asin Nuran. Although this friend of mine was regarded by his comrades and acquaintances as rather a queer fellow, they all respected and esteemed him, for he was very intelligent and learned and often raised questions that everyone willy-nilly had to ponder seriously. Before his initiation into the dervish order, he had been a professional watchmaker, and in the monastery he devoted all his spare time to this favorite craft of his. My friend, the dervish Kerbalay Asis Nuran, had recently, by the way, become greatly intrigued by a certain bizarre idea. He was trying to make a mechanical watch that would show the exact time without the aid of any spring whatever. He explained this bizarre idea of his in the following brief and simple statement. "Nothing on earth is absolutely still, since the earth itself moves. On the earth, only weight is stable, and then only in half the space occupied by its volume. I wish to obtain such a perfect equilibrium of the levers that their movement, which must necessarily proceed from the tempo of the movement of the earth, should correspond exactly to the movement of the hands of a clock," and so on and so forth. When I went to see this odd friend of mine and explained what I wanted and what help I expected of him, he at once became very much interested and promised to help me in every way he could, and the very next day we set to work together. Through this joint effort, the skeleton of the mechanical musical instrument I had devised was soon ready. I myself marked the correct places for the strings and stretched them, while my eccentric friend continued to work on the mechanism of the little hammers. And when I had finished stretching the strings and was tuning them in the required way, I made a discovery of such interest that it led me to the experiments concerning the laws of vibration which I'm still pursuing today. It began in this way. I must first tell you that before this, I knew very well that half the length of a string gives twice the number of vibrations of a whole string of equal diameter and density. And according to this principle, I arranged what are called bridges for the strings on the cymbal, and then tuned all the strings for a certain ancient sacred melody in 1/8 tones, of course, making use of my parambarsadivan, or tuning fork, as it's called in Europe, which gave the vibrations of the Chinese absolute do. It was while I was tuning the strings that I first noticed that the principle according to which the number of vibrations of a string is inversely proportional to its length does not always, but only sometimes, hold true in relation to what is called a common blending of harmonic consonants. My discovery so interested me that I gave all my attention to the investigation of this alone and entirely stopped working on the cymbal. It so happened that my odd friend also became very interested in the same thing, and we started to investigate together this fact which had astonished us both. Only after several days, my friend and I noticed that we were neglecting our main work, and we therefore decided from that day on to devote half our time to finishing the cymbal and the other half to our investigations. And indeed, we soon managed to carry out both of our tasks, and in such a way that one did not interfere with the other. The mechanical cymbal with strings I had devised was soon ready and was entirely satisfactory to us. It turned out to be something like a modern Greek hand organ, but with quarter tones and a little larger in size. It was set in action by turning, which made the small hammers strike the corresponding strings, and this correspondence was obtained by means of bundles of flattened reeds in which we had cut notches with the heads of the hammers fell between the tuning and thus started the strings vibrating. For each sacred melody, we prepared and fastened together a separate bundle of these flattened reeds which could be changed at will according to the melody desired. When we finally handed over our unusual cymbal to our sheikh and told him what interested us most at that moment, he not only gave us his blessing to leave the monastery for a while in order to devote ourselves to the question which so engrossed us, but he even put at our disposal a large sum of money from the reserve funds of the monastery. We then moved here and began to live far from other people and outside of our brotherhood. My friend and I lived here the whole time, in complete peace and concord, until recently, when I lost forever this never-to-be-forgotten and irreplaceable friend of mine, and I lost him in the following lamentable circumstances. Several weeks ago, he went down to the banks of the river Amu Darya, to the town of X, to get various materials and instruments. As he was leaving the town to return here, a stray bullet from an exchange of shots between the Russians and the Anglo-Afghans struck him down on the spot, and I was immediately informed of this calamity by mutual acquaintances of ours, a sart who chanced to be passing by. Several days later, I brought his body back and buried it over there, and he pointed to a corner of the cave where a curious mound could be seen. Having said this, Haji Asvats Truv rose and made a gesture of prayer, evidently for the repose of the soul of his friend, and then motioned with his head for us to follow him.